Summer camp is a magic place where kids discover who they are because they have the freedom to explore on their own. Y Camp at Horse Thief Reservoir is a sleepaway camp in the heart of Idaho's wilderness. Each summer, campers make friends, build new skills, and learn to love the outdoors through activities like canoeing, archery, zip lining, rock climbing, campfires, and more. Registration for Y Camp at Horse Thief Reservoir is open. Financial assistance is available. Learn more at ycampidaho.org.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we've got a great show for you today. Our guest is a gentleman named Kenneth Gee. Kenneth is the founder and managing partner of KRI Partners and the KRI Group of Companies. He has more than 24 years of significant real estate, banking, private equity transaction, and principal investing experience. Throughout his career, he has been involved in transactions valued at more than $2 billion, much of which has included the acquisition, management, and financing of various multifamily real estate projects. Well, Ken, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Bill. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm thrilled. I think you've got a lot of great information to share with our listeners. And I'd just like if you would just take a few moments here just to kind of tell us who you are and where you come from and how you eventually ended up in real estate.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, a small town, northwestern Ohio. Went to the University of Toledo, got my undergrad there in finance. Then I moved to Cleveland, got married, and got my master's degree at a small private school called Case Western Reserve University. If you're from the area or regional, you might know it. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't. I pursued an accounting degree there. And while I was doing that, I was working for a local bank as a commercial lender. And after I finished my degree at Case, I ended up at Deloitte as a CPA. That was what I thought my calling was in life. And so I spent 7 years there, did a lot of private equity work, merger and acquisition work, a lot of tax planning. I worked on the tax side at Deloitte in the Cleveland office. And so a couple of things happened to me. Number one, all of my customers at the bank did real estate. All of my, well, not all of my clients at Deloitte, but Deloitte had a massive real estate practice in the office, in the Cleveland office. So I was constantly around folks that were doing really well in real estate. And so now here I am, I'm young, have a wife, two young kids, and I used to, every night, take care of the middle of the night feeding. If you have kids, you know what that means. Father-daughter time right. is awesome. Mom needs a break, so I would gladly do the middle of the night feeding because then, you know, it was a good time to bond with your daughter. So I'm sure if there's any guys out there listening, I suspect you know what that kind of bond is. It's really, really a cool bond. But what started happening was I started to think, because now the house is quiet and it's just her and I, and she's doing her little bottle thing. And so your mind starts to wander. And I started, you know, that time with her sort of got ruined after a while because I started thinking about, you know, how was I going to put her through school without, you know, tons of debt? How was I going to retire? How was I going to do all the nice things for my family that I wanted to do? So, you know, I was working, I don't know how much you know about CPAs, but they work pretty hard and lots of long hours. And I just wasn't getting ahead. I just, you know, work money in, money out. I didn't feel like I was getting anywhere. So I thought to myself, I got to solve this problem because I'm not going to continue to work 12, 14 hours a day and not get anywhere, not get to my goal. So what I ended up doing was said, okay, well, I know these people know real estate, but I don't know real estate yet. So I took 2 years and several thousand dollars of my money and just learned about real estate. And back then, you may have remembered the name Carlton Sheets.
Oh, yeah.
there's a blast from the past.
That's, yeah.
That was the only thing that was really out there that taught you about real estate. And so he did single family homes, and I was, you know, I didn't think I wanted to do single family homes because I didn't figure out how it fit in my life because I was working at Deloitte, and I really didn't have time to spend on the weekends fixing leaky pipes and things like that. So what I ended up settling on is finally in 1997, I bought my first apartment building, and it was a 28-unit building. It was big enough that I could have somebody on site who could show the apartments for me and do all that kind of stuff. So to buy that property, I had borrowed half the down payment from my home equity line and convinced my in-laws to give me the other half and, you know, sort of trust me. And then I bought a second, a third, and about 3 years later is what really changed my life for real estate, and that was that I sold those three properties. And mind you, I was doing this on the side while I was still working at Deloitte.
Wow.
But I had made $500,000 in profit on those three properties.
That's awesome.
And think back to, you know, the younger me, $500,000, and it still is an enormous amount of money, but it changed my life. You know, before I couldn't figure out how I was going to put her through school without debt, and I now know, I knew exactly what I had to do, right? If I can make this much money on the side, this is something I need to continue to do. You know, I now knew how, before I couldn't figure out how I was going to retire, now I knew how I was going to retire. So all those things that I sat there and thought about in the middle of the night, and I just couldn't figure out how I was going to deal with them, it became so obvious as to how I was going to deal with them. And so 25 years later, 18 deals later, here I am, and I'm happy to report I was able to put her through school without debt and my son, and you know, I could probably retire tomorrow if I want. I'm just having too much fun right now. So anyway, so there's my story.
What a blast. What a blast. Wow. That's a great story. Great story. When you sold those first properties, now, were you thinking you were selling them to get out of it at that time? Or were you selling them with the idea of, you know, staying in it? Because it sounds like you kind of made that decision around that same point.
Yeah, so interesting. I sold those properties because the area that they were located in, it just seemed to make sense to me. The area, part of Cleveland that these properties were located is known as Shaker Square. And the city was investing a lot in the square. Everybody had very high hopes for Shaker Square in terms of its future. And I thought, you know what? I have these three properties. They're doing well. So I can sell them and price them based on everybody's expectations that things are just going to go through the roof in that area, or I can wait and hopefully it works, and then I'll be the beneficiary of that. Well, I chose to sell based on everybody's expectations, and as it turns out, it was the right thing to do. But what happens until you actually see that money hit your bank account, you don't believe it.
Right.
You just don't believe it's going to happen. So the thought, oh, okay, I'll do this and then I'll keep moving, that was not how the thoughts were being processed back then. You know, when I've got the money, then I realized, okay, now that was when the money actually hit my bank account and I digested what had just happened to me. That was when I realized this is something I got to keep doing. I mean, how can you not do this if you can make this kind of money doing this and without that much work? So that's how and when I made the decision to continue on with real estate.
That's great. Now, is your wife involved with your business at all, or she has her
own? Yeah, no, she's not. So my wife then, we've since divorced, and so I took a few years off devoted to my kids, and that's okay. You know, amicable divorce, everybody gets along. It's a wonderful story. I'm now remarried to a wonderful woman, and so she does her own thing, and I do my own thing. My kids are now grown. My son's 25, my daughter's 23, my stepdaughter's 23. So now it's just my wife and I, and we're kind of, you know, we're kind of having fun doing our thing with our, you know, respective careers. And, of course, you know, we enjoy our time together and we enjoy our time with our kids now.
That's great. And are you still in Ohio?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I kind of split my time. So the back office of our company is located in Cleveland. And it's just such a well-run. We have some great people in our back office, so we're going to continue to maintain that there. I live in Cleveland. My wife does. Her daughter is still in Cleveland. But our corporate office is in Tampa. So everything we do right now is in Florida and in the Southeast, just because I believe in the growth story. So I spend at least half my time in Florida.
Oh, okay. That's great. So you've got that other operation going out there But you've still got significant investments in the Cleveland area?
Actually, no. We got out of everything we were doing in Cleveland. You know, you have to decide how you're going to spend your time. And when you're in a growth market like Florida, I mean, you think about Florida, about 1,000 people are moving in every day, and they're not building that many new houses, that much new housing in Florida. They are building some higher-end stuff, but that's not what we do. We take just, you know, normal apartment communities and make them better, make them nicer, raise rents, of course. That's called a value-add strategy. And the housing that we buy, they can't build. They can't afford to build that. So we accommodate the folks, just the ordinary people that move into the state of Florida, which are most of the people that move to the state of Florida are just ordinary folks, right? That's the way I refer to them, because they are. They're just normal people like you and I. And then, of course, there's the wealthy people that can afford the $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month rent. They're being taken care of by the builders. But the ordinary person, which is the bulk of the growth, it doesn't have any new housing added. So in our business, that's good, because that means we have some, you know, basically the same supply trying to accommodate more people. So price just automatically goes up when that happens.
Oh, that's great.
We can't do in Cleveland what we can do in Florida in terms of growth. I just can't.
Gotcha. And your first apartment you purchased in what year was that?
1997.
So quite a few years later here. So you have stayed in apartments exclusively for the most part since then?
Yeah. Well, so I worked for Deloitte. I was always, well, I took a break. Well, no, that's not true. I was always in apartments. So I took a break in terms of owning apartments, maybe 4 or 5 years, because when you go through a divorce, you're not going to go out and buy new apartment communities. That's not a good idea. No partner would appreciate that if you did that to them,
right?
Because they don't want to go through that process with you. So other than that, yeah, we've been in apartments. During that time, we managed, you know, probably 1,500 apartment units. So we were always in the business. It's just whether, you know, I took a few years there just for out of necessity and did not buy any new properties. We had owned some properties still, but we just didn't buy anything new during that time. Now, interestingly, during that time, I decided it would also be a good idea to buy a couple, a Cessna Pilot Center.
Now, where did that come from?
You know, it's funny because I wanted to learn to fly. And remember I told you I was working at Deloitte.
Right.
And Deloitte's office is located downtown Cleveland. Well, downtown Cleveland is a small airport called Burke Lakefront Airport. And so a couple times a week, I would go down at lunchtime. Nobody knew I was doing this. I would literally go down the elevator, get in my car, drive to the airport, go do my flying lesson at my lunch break, and go back and finish my day.
No way.
So what kind of CPA does that, right? Nobody had any clue. And so that was so much fun. I enjoyed it. And I thought, you know what, this guy that owned the company, he was flying a lot of older airplanes, and he had one new airplane, and that was the only airplane I would fly because I don't want to fly something that's older than me. So I thought, you know what, this is a huge business opportunity this guy's missing out on. So I bought the company from him, didn't pay much for it, and it was right before 9/11, actually. So we turned over the fleet from all old stuff to all new stuff. And then, of course, 9/11 hit. So, you know, that was a rough time for the flight school business, flight school industry.
Right.
We got through it just fine, but we taught lots and lots of people to fly. We became part of the Delta Connection Network, so we would train pilots to go all the way to Delta,
wow.
You know, on their regional system. Mm-hmm. And we owned, when I sold the company, we had an operation at Burke Lakefront, Cuyahoga County Airport, and Akron Canton Airport.
Wow.
It taught me how to run a decentralized business is what it did, and to really get focused when things like 9/11 impact your business.
Right. You still fly today?
You know, I don't. I'm blind in one eye, and so I passed the FAA medical exam, but the hardest time to see another airplane when you're flying is when it is literally coming right at you head on,
right?
Because that's when its profile is the smallest when you're looking at an airplane. So I just decided, no, I'll let the people with two eyes fly, and I would fly once in a while with another pilot, but now I spent so much time with my kids, I just kind of let it lapse. So it was a fun thing that I did. Once you have your license, you always have it. I'm just not current any longer.
Sure.
But it was a lot of fun. No question about that.
What a kick. And okay, well, you went through some various interesting times. I mean, you mentioned 9/11, you know, and but also you went through the Great Recession too. And
I did.
How did your company fare? How did your properties fare during that time?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So again, you know, remember I ran flight schools through 9/11, and a real estate company through 2008-2009, and both of those events taught me an enormous amount about how to manage a business and how to really, do things that matter. So, you know, we did just fine. There were folks losing properties here and there, but we never did. You know, we made it through it just fine. Got really tight with our management and, you know, did what we needed to do. And as we came out of there, flourished. So there's a lot of reasons why that whole recession happened. And probably the biggest thing I take from that is, you know, some of the things that happened during that time are some of the things that I, to this day, those risk factors I attempt to mitigate whenever we do a transaction. You know, like debt maturities and things like that. It all, you know, all these things that happen to you in life, I've learned now as I'm older, you know, they're lessons, they're important lessons, and they need to accumulate so that you can protect against those risks going forward. So that was the biggest thing we got out of 2008-2009. But, you know, we did fine through it.
Yeah, I think the apartments in general did, you know, so much better. I mean, it was the single family home market that really got hit. But
it did, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another good case for multifamily, you know, just
very big case. Yeah.
Surviving that. And now we've got some new challenges, right? We've got just crazy inflation and rising interest rates, and COVID that just devastated the country and the world. How did you guys fare through that?
So, if you take those events individually, so let's look at COVID. We were actually busier than ever during COVID because people needed their homes more than ever. They were all working from home.
Right.
So we actually, you know, our challenge was operationally adjusting so that we could continue to provide the service that our residents needed and do what we needed to do while keeping our people safe. So, you know, people always hear me talk about experience matters, right? When you talk about who you should place money with when you're looking at investing in real estate. But COVID is a good example as to why, right? You want a senior management team that's experienced a lot of different things so that when it comes time to respond to whatever is around the corner, that they have some experience to draw on. So we actually did very well through COVID financially. You know, we buy properties in good areas with good diverse income streams. So, you know, we had a couple folks that were struggling to get through it, you know, that maybe had lost their jobs. And we worked with them. We did everything we could to help them through that, right? That's what you need to do. That's what you should be prepared to do. So that was, you know, a lot of work. But, you know, we certainly got through it just fine. You're talking about now the inflation and the interest rates that we're experiencing. If you need to figure out where to put your money during inflationary times or higher interest rates, you know, real estate really is something most people should consider. And the reason I say that is if you look at the bank, well, they're not paying much. The stock market, I mean, that's been no fun lately. crypto has not been any fun. So, you know, when rates go up, bond prices go down. So there's just a lot of things that haven't been very fun. But here's what happens in multifamily. So when you have inflation, which in our case has been basically supply constraint caused, right, because the supply chains haven't been able to catch up to the demand that just turned back on. So we have inflationary times. We have the Fed that raises rates to try to deal with that. When the Fed raises rates to try to deal with that, what it actually does is it makes it harder for people to buy homes. Mm-hmm. But they still need a place to live. So we can't figure out a way to get rid of that need, right? Everybody's going to have a place to live. So it even increases demand for apartments even more. So although people will tell you that cap rates are increasing, they are, because interest rates are increasing. But rents are able to be increased enough to more than offset that, especially if you're in a growth market like Florida. So, you know, in our market, remember I talked about Florida's market and how it is a supply or demand far exceeds supply. Now we raise interest rates and make it even harder to buy a single family home. So that puts people back into the apartment world. That's just more demand for us. So we actually fare very well during higher inflationary times, higher interest rate times, for the reasons that I just described.
Great. Yeah, that's, I second your statement there that I think it's the best place for anybody to invest right now. The only thing that you know, has that solid asset to back up that investment. Yeah, you know, there's been dips in real estate over the years and so forth, but it always goes up and it always ends up doing better. And it's, you know, just looking at the other options out there for folks that are especially retired, that are, you know, dealing with pensions or dealing with 401ks or IRAs, and you know, that's their survival. And you know, the returns that you still can get in real estate are fantastic.
Yeah, our investors, I mean, when we underwrite our deals, we're underwriting to 15% annual returns, and we typically deliver. I mean, there's no guarantees, as you and your listeners likely know.
Right.
I mean, it's a real-life business, but typically we're able to deliver 20-30% plus annual returns between the cash flow and then, you know, the increase in value. And, you know, you talked about real estate always going up. You know, there's a big difference between a single family home and why it goes up in value versus the multifamily world, right? In our world, the increase in value is fairly predictable because we're able to increase the cash flow. And that's what I love about it, right? This is the CPA conservative lender in me coming out. I like to see some correlation between my ability to generate more cash flow for an asset and its value, right? There's that direct connection in the apartment world. And that's why the values continue to go up in the apartment world, because it's kind of predictable and it's based on cash flow, right? People will probably always pay for cash flow. Agreed?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's at least as a retired guy, that is my primary focus.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So That's why I love doing what I do. That's why I will always do this the rest of my life. We deliver some amazing things for our investors, and it has certainly, you know, improved my life considerably and completely changed it. And so now, you know, I'm 57, so time for me to give back. And nothing makes me happier than to write our investors huge checks when we sell an asset, because now I know that, you know, they can put their grandkids through school if they want to, because they have money they didn't know they were going to get.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, you've been doing this for a while here, and I'm sure that you have learned a lot along the way. What would you say are maybe some of the bigger mistakes you might have made somewhere down the line there that you've learned from? You've kind of positioned your company and the way you do things to make things even better.
Yeah, so, well, over 25 years, you learn a lot of lessons that, you know, there's probably thousands of lessons that I've learned over the years. If I were to pick a couple that probably had the biggest impact, one, I would say, if you're investing with somebody, make sure that they're managing their debt load appropriately. You know, you don't want to, some people like to prop up returns by, you know, really increasing debt and leverage on the asset when they buy it. I mean, you know, we never really did that early on in our investing career. We did it, but it was okay. But now, you know, I see people that really get in trouble doing that because you generate this massive fixed cost with debt, and then if things do struggle, you're not going to be able to make your debt payments. So that I have seen people do probably on the renovation side. Probably the biggest mistake we've ever made is, you know, when you buy a property, you're excited. You're excited to get it going. You're excited to get the project going. And you know, day one, you just start spending all your renovation money and you do it. Well, a long time ago, you know, I kind of spent my budget only to realize that I learned something about the property that I didn't know. And not that the seller didn't disclose it, but I mean, you just don't know everything before you buy an asset like that. And I wish I would have saved back some money to deal. I don't even remember what the issue was now. It's so long ago. But, you know, you want to save back some money to make sure that you, when you do learn something new, you have some money on reserve to take care of those things. And, you know, in that particular deal, I'd kind of run out and spend all the money. So, I mean, I funded it with my own money, but it would have been a lot easier to not have to do that. So that's probably a big lesson that I've learned. To this day, when we buy a property, we don't renovate on day one. We sit on I call it sitting on our hands for about 30, 45 days till we figure out where the skeletons are. Let's make sure we know what we're dealing with, and we'll adjust the plan as necessary and then move forward.
Yeah, great, great philosophy and a great strategic approach, I think, because, I mean, I'm sure you already have your reserves and so forth for things down the road, but there are those things you just can't you can't know until you're in the property, and so that's
right.
Great advice. Well, how about something that you did from the beginning that really ended up being much more successful than you anticipated? Maybe you know, some of your biggest successes.
Yeah. So let me think about this. So, back when I first bought my first apartment building, although I did a lot of work, I did a lot of research, I thought I knew a lot. Remember, I was a CPA and a lender, and I thought, boy, I'm really prepared for this. But the one thing that I didn't understand was this concept of what a value-add business plan really was. I was young, and I just didn't understand it. Well, I met this lady. Her name is Karen. I won't use her last name because that wouldn't be appropriate, but she taught me a lesson. She said, Ken, what was happening is the first building that I bought, the rents were like, believe it or not, $415 a month for a one-bedroom apartment, including heat.
Wow.
And I know that dated the whole thing right there.
Really?
So I bought this thing, and I'm getting the applications that the woman was sending me, and the credit reports were all bad. I thought, oh, boy, I can't find good residents. This is going to be a problem. And so I don't remember why or how I ran across Karen, but I did. Karen said to me, Ken, you need to make this nicer. If you build it, they will come. And I remember looking at her saying, wait, Karen, stop it. Wait a minute. I just put everything I had into buying this stupid thing, and now you want me to go spend how much? And she said, oh, it'll take about $5,000 to update a unit. I said, $5,000? Are you kidding me? I don't have $5,000. She said, well, I'm just telling you, if you do it, you won't be sorry. I'm like, okay. So I whipped out my credit card, right, and spent the money. I made the unit nice. And the next thing you know, I was getting $599 for rents.
Awesome.
And wow, the applications were good. So that, now here's the reason I tell you that story. I tell you that story because that was how I got introduced to the real value add business model. This wonderful woman named Karen, who I haven't seen in 15 plus years. I wish, you know, I owe her a massive debt of gratitude because she really taught me and convinced me to do it. And that is the business plan that we implement today that's made us and our investors millions and millions of dollars. So I don't know. There's the story. That's probably the biggest impact on my business, you know, my real estate investing career, was her and her lesson that she taught me.
God, that's great. It's great that you learned it so early too in the game, because obviously it had an impact on all future investments from there, that point forward. So that's
sure did.
That's great.
You bet.
Well, our audience, as you know, are folks that are 50 years of age and older. They're either approaching retirement or they're in retirement, and they're looking at real estate as a means to either supplement their cash flow or to sustain and grow that nest egg that they're going to be living on for the rest of their lives. What would be your advice for those folks as they're looking at real estate investing as a means to help them to achieve that goal?
I mean, I can't think of a better way to accomplish both of those goals, because when you have real estate, you have cash flow. Assuming it, you know, whoever you're investing with knows what they're doing, you'll have cash flow and you'll have appreciation, because hopefully they're implementing some sort of value add plan and they're making the property more valuable because they're charging higher rents. And so not only does the cash flow improve over time, but then so does the value. So you're accomplishing two things. One, you're giving somebody something to live off of, right? Some cash flow from their investment. And you're providing a huge jump to their nest egg when that property is sold. And, you know, I tell you, it's not uncommon for people to double their money in 2, 3, 4 years in our business.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. There's no guarantees. I have to keep reminding everybody of that. But it's why I like it. And then, of course, there's the whole tax benefit that you get investing in real estate that you just don't get in stocks and everything else. You just don't get them. Those cash flow distributions generally are not taxable when you receive them. It's not until the property is sold, and then you get capital gains treatment instead of ordinary income. So it's just a huge win all the way around. And you know, it's that way for a lot of reasons, the least of which is the government wants everybody to stay invested in residential real estate, meaning apartment buildings, so they give us benefits to do that. I can't find an, if I'm a retiree, this is where I put my money.
Yeah,
because it just makes sense.
I agree. I totally agree with you. Back in, I don't know, you know, from 2015, 16, whatever. The deals we were doing in terms of value add, you know, we'd hold them for 3 years, usually at max, you know, sometimes we'd get rid of them in 2 years, you know, or less. It's just, you know, it's just such a hot market. But what are you doing in terms of your sort of your standard hold? I know it varies from market to market, but how are you approaching that and on the hold of that property?
Sure. So we're still looking at a 3 to 5 year hold. So when we buy, and this is where experience matters. So when and we do our homework, when we buy a property, we're going to project what we think the rents can be, and we build it into our projections. But what we do is we do a very detailed rent study to make sure that on the day we close, we will get the rents that we're projecting on the day we close. That is always what we try to underwrite to, so that then anything I get over and above that is going to be an over-deliver for the investor. So If you look at the market where it is today, look at one level above where you're at, you can see where you're going to take your property. And you're going to see, you know, you're going to act like you're a renter. And you're going to compare the properties in your market, and you're going to look up, you know, to the nicer ones, right? I can't think of another way to describe it. But you look at the nicer ones, and you ask yourself, would a prospective renter choose your property over that much nicer one for whatever difference in rent that it is? And you manage that difference and make sure that it's enough that people will, you know, still want to live in your property. So you fit into the market, right? You want to understand how you fit in today, not in 3 years, not in 5 years. Where do you fit today? And that's where you should project your rents to be. And that's what we do. So then it usually takes us 2 to 3 years to turn, because we don't go in and throw people out. We just don't do that. That would be inhumane. So, as you know, we have reasonable rent increases with renewals, and people in Florida especially, I mean, 40 to 45% of your property moves every year. How much faster do you have to move things, right?
I mean, right, exactly.
You really need to turn more units. So, you know, we're able to get to our business plan in a year or two. And usually we're, you know, in year three, it just seems obvious that you should sell. But, you know, maybe it's year four. It just depends, right? So it's 3 to 5 years. But that's how we do our underwriting, and that's what makes our deal successful, is that we underwrite them that way. We're not relying on future rent increases. So after our value-add rent increase, our future rent increases are 2%, which, I mean, think about $1,400 rent, 2% is nothing. It's $28. I mean, nobody, when's the last time you only had a $28 rent increase? I mean, that's just, you know, really, really low.
Right, right. But, you know, when you put it in perspective of an entire building that whose value is tied to that, you know, it's pretty significant too at the same time in terms of returns.
It is. So we like to $300 to $400 in cash flow. So if you were able to take a 100-unit property and you're able to raise rents $300, right? Just because you raise rents $300 doesn't mean you have all new expenses. So that $300 generally falls right to the bottom line. So if you got 300 times 100, that's $30,000 a month. You multiply that times 12, that's another $360,000 a year.
Exactly.
Well, that equates to new value, right? Because remember I said people generally pay more for more cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
So if you divide that by a cap rate of, say, 5%, which is reasonable, I mean, that property just went up by $7 million in value.
Right.
So maybe it's $6 million, right? Because there's transaction costs and what have you. But, I mean, that's a crazy amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And that's why our business works so well.
Yeah. That's why you got to love it. It's a multifamily is a great place to be. What's sort of your average, you know, preferred return on just the cash flow side?
Yeah, sure. The fund that we're raising right now is a 6% preferred return. So what happens in our fund is you get your 6% preferred return. We pay it quarterly. Then you get all your money back, all your capital back, and then it's an 80-20 split after that.
Gotcha. Awesome.
So the bonus is backloaded, which is what it should be.
Yeah. No,
in my opinion.
And that's what's always the nice part about a value-add deal is that you do have that bonus at the end and don't always know what it's going to be. And, you know, if it's done right, most people are very pleasantly surprised. So,
you're not really getting into these deals. I mean, yes, you're getting into the deal for the cash flow, but if all you get out of that deal is a 6% cash flow, that's not good at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fail. In our world, that's a fail.
Right, but you add in that that bonus at the end, and that's what really makes the difference.
It does, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you know, you mentioned early on that you really don't even have to be doing this anymore, and but you're still doing it. But what excites you about the future and of your company? Where do you see it going in the next, you know, 10, 20 years down the road?
Sure. Yeah. So in terms of why am I still here and why am I still doing it, there's two reasons, really. One, it really makes me happy when I'm able to sell a property and write our investors big checks, because then I get to hear the stories as to what they're able to do It's really incredible knowing that, you know, what we did for a particular investor. We have a retired NFL referee who refereed in the Super Bowl. He was able to buy his second home in Florida because of his investment dollars with us, right? That stuff makes me feel good.
That's awesome.
It just does. It really makes me feel good to be able to do that. Number two, you know, I'm now, I've been doing this for a while, right? So now it's time for me to give back and teach the next group of people how to do it so that they can hopefully avoid some of the mistakes I made early on. So those are the two reasons that I really stay as active as I do, because, you know, I really, you know, now that I've grown older, you know, it's not about me anymore. It's kind of, you know, it's about what you can do for the world. So that's why I'm still at it. And in terms of where we're going as a company, you know, we're going to continue to grow. And while we're growing, not only will we do great things for our investors, but now we're able to put packages in place for our member, for our team, for our folks, for our people that work for us, that they can also benefit and reach their professional and financial goals as part of our company, right? It's just not a job. You know, it's not just a job. So that's why we're doing what we're doing, and that's why we're going to continue to grow it, because it's, you know, we all win if we all stick together and do the right things.
It's a good approach. Good approach. Well, we have kind of zipped by our time here, and we have a segment we call Wrap It Up, where I ask you a series of quick questions and resources that you've used that you can share with our listeners, and hopefully there'll be some good things that they'll learn in the process. So if you're ready, we can wrap it up.
Let's do it, sir.
All right. Favorite real estate book?
Favorite real estate book. That's a good one. Wow, there's so many out there. It's been a while since I've read many. Maybe one I wrote. One, Multifamily is a total game changer. I only wrote it because, for two reasons. One, people are trying to figure out how real estate should fit in their lives, and I help them think through that because I get that question literally daily. And then secondly, most people should do this passively, right? Which is probably a lot of your audience, right? They're probably not about to go start buying apartment buildings on their own. How do you figure out who you're going to invest with, who you should invest with? How does this business really work? So the second half of the book goes into how this business works, what makes us tick, how do you pick the right sponsor, what kind of questions should you ask, that kind of thing. So I know I didn't expect to cite my own book as the real estate book, but I think it's really relevant, especially for your listeners being over 50, because that's, you know, we have a lot of folks in that range that are invested in our funds.
Sure.
I wanted to make good decisions about where they invest.
No problem. Hey, how about just favorite general business book?
General business book. I like, a number of them. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey. I like that a lot. I like, in terms of work ethic, I like Grant Cardone's 10X Rule, because I just think you just got to give it everything you got in order to be successful.
How about a website that you use for your own success on a regular basis that helps you in your real estate business?
Now, how about life overall? How about if we talk about YouTube?
Sure.
I think you can almost become a brain surgeon by watching enough videos on YouTube. You laugh, but I tell you, there's so much you can learn on YouTube and these podcasts. There's just so much information out there now that you can get. I turn to YouTube all the time for, you know, trying to figure out this or that, you know, whatever it is. It's probably the most dynamic resource I use.
No, it is great. It is great. Do you have an app on your phone, something that you use on a regular basis?
You know, I would say probably the most used is Trello.
Yeah.
Other than my maps when I travel all the time.
Yeah, that's a good one. Definitely. And this one, which doesn't sound like you've had any experience with, but nonetheless, I'll throw it out at you. If you lost absolutely everything, all of your assets, and you had to start over, knowing what you already know, and you only had $1,000 in cash, what would you do to relaunch your real estate investing business?
Yeah, you know, you said I didn't have any of you, but you probably haven't been through a divorce. That is what happens to you when you get divorced. Mm-hmm. So I can totally relate to that. And what would I do? I would do exactly what I did. And that is, you know, just go out and put deal after deal together. And, you know, you have knowledge. Right?
Right.
You didn't take that away from me.
Exactly.
You took my money away.
Knowing what you already know, right.
Yeah, you didn't take my knowledge away. So if I have the knowledge, I'm able to figure out how to put a deal together that is initially is not going to require much cash. I will partner with people who have the cash, and I do all the work. You know, I will find a way to use real estate to recover because it's the number one best way. To grow wealth in America, I think, today.
I agree. Well, gosh, I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening that would like to find out more about you, your company, maybe some projects you're working on. What's the best way for folks to reach you?
Yeah, sure. So I would encourage people to look at that book that I just talked about. You can get it by going to kripartners.com/ebook. Download it. It's free. We trade your email for the book. I did write every word in it. And that way it gives you a good feel for how I think. And then, you know, you can reach out to our website, our YouTube channel. It's all under KRI Partners. And you can, you know, we have YouTube videos about how we do what we do. We've got some case studies out there, some summaries of our fund. So KRIPartners.com/ebook, and then, you know, we're on all the social media sites and everything else. But I think most people use YouTube to kind of get a feel for who I am and what we do and how we do it because it's visual and you can learn a lot.
That's great. Great. Well, we have a tradition here on the Old Dogs REI Network that our guests get to close us. I know we're called, you know, the Old Dogs Network here, and so our guests close us out with their best old hound dog howl. Now, are you ready for this?
Well, you know what I have to do. You go ahead. You know what I'm going to do.
Okay, I'm not sure what you're going to do.
You're not sure what I'm going to do.
You're supposed to howl,
though. But I'm
from
Cleveland. Okay. Think about Cleveland.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay.
So you know where I'm going with this. The dog pound.
Yes.
And you know what the dog pound does, right? Hoof, 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 hoof. You ever been to the dog pound? That's
yes,
what they do.
Very good, very good. I love it. I love it. That's I should have thought of that. You know, you guys got the hot teams out.
And we are the DAWG pound.
I love it.
So we're very closely related.
I love it. Well, man, thank you so much, Ken, for coming on. A lot of good information there. A lot, I think, our listeners can take home with them and help them to move forward in their REI adventures here.
Well, thanks so much for having me, but I really have enjoyed this, Bill. Thank you.
Oh, likewise. Please note, Old Dog listeners, everything presented here today can be accessed in our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode featuring Kenneth Gee. All right. Well, that is the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward. And may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.